You're listening to All Marine Radio on the All Warrior Radio Network.
I remember walking round the court square sidewalks, looking in the windows, things I couldn't want. There's Johnson's Hardware and Morgan's Jewelry. And the Holy King's Apothecary, they were the little man.
It's Alan Jackson singing Little Man, walking around Granbury, Texas. Could have been singing this song. Joining me, speaking of Granbury, Texas, is Michael Musselman. Gunner, what's up? How's your weekend?
What's going on? Pretty good.
Nothing. What, are you asleep?
No, I'm just trying to fight this headache this morning. It's a little irritating right now.
With what?
It's silence. It's one of those things. It's like sounds.
Just any sound?
No, like it's hard to explain. It's like multiple sounds. It's like, you know when you want to clear your head and you just want to stop thinking about something?
Yes.
So that's what it is. But the problem is when there's like too many sounds, like too much stuff, too much background noise, it's your mind just starts, I guess, concentrating on all that. It's hard to explain, but it's, you know, when I try to explain, like, sometimes what the headaches feel like, it's, you want to try and, like, calm it down. You know, everything, there's, like, all this commotion going on in your head, and you want to, you got to concentrate on, like, if there's, like, 20 little things that are just making noise, you got to work on one at a time, and then calm that down, calm the next one down. Then it seems like when you get to number 12, the 11 ones you just did go ape shit again, so you're back at square one. So it's just like a, you can't stop. It's kind of weird to explain, but it's processing, trying to stop processing all sorts of sounds. So that's what it is. It's not a full headache. It's just irritating.
Shouldn't you be sitting in silence then?
No, that's why I got the headphones on. Headphones, it blocks out. Like when I was sitting on the sofa, I was reading a book. I was trying to like relax and calm down. I could hear the fan blades.
Ooh.
And then you hear the fan blades cutting the air. And then you hear, you know, a plane. And you hear footsteps. And then you start hearing a door. And then you start, I mean, then it, then before you know it, I mean, what you're picking up is like there's 12 different sounds going on at one time. Normally you don't pay attention to that. But when you, like when I got these, like this type of headache, every little thing has its own distinctive sound. And it feels like it's just all happening at once.
And then you put the headphones on and you hear my voice and you're like, oh, this is so wonderful.
Well, it's just, you know, like this, the communication is fine. Because it's only one thing.
It's all the other things? What you're describing to me sounds like crazy to me. I don't hear. Now, is this a precursor to your?
Yeah.
It is.
This is one of those, if you can get it under control, everything will be fine. It just keeps building and building and building.
But is this precursor to migraines or something else?
Yeah, this is a precursor. It starts to build. And then you lose control of it.
So what do you do?
Isolation.
Hmm. When do you get your shots again?
Oh, that's not until, what, November?
Yeah, I was going to say.
No, and like I said, this one, I've been doing great. And then, like, today, I don't know why, just today. I think I want to, so when I was telling T, you know, we were talking about it, I'm trying to explain to her, when I wake up, I have to wake up slow, you know, with nothing. Because if I wake up too quick, I can't get a hold of, like, my mind's racing. It's thinking too fast. It's just like thinking. It's like, you know, we're talking, like, we joke about the monkeys, right? So imagine your mind, there's 20 screaming monkeys, and you got to get them all under control. And you can't do it all at once because they're freaking monkeys, and they're not going to listen. So you got to do one at a time. And by the time you get to number five, one, two, three, and four have now acted up again. So you got to go back and start over again. And so it's a constant juggling of, you know, getting everything under control, getting your thoughts, because your mind is racing. You're thinking about everything. You're thinking from, I mean, it is. I think you could be clinically diagnosed as being crazy, but, you know, you're thinking about everything from freaking laying masonry bricks to peanut butter and jelly sandwiches. And like I said, I just have no control over it sometimes. I just start thinking about everything. But it all happens at once. And so now you can understand kind of like, it's a feeling of like helplessness because you can't, you try and explain to somebody and they look at you like, what the fuck are you talking about?
Yeah, it sounds like something out of a horror movie. You know what I mean? Like you would see you would see it in, you know, what they would do is they'd take the audio and the audio would kind of get, you know, come in cuts and then it would be matched to a, some kind of video or still image and that would be changing very quickly or it would change at a regular, right? It would change at a regular, it would change at a regular intervals.
And so
it
sounds.
Would get confusing, yeah. The sounds would come and go loud and not loud.
Have you ever seen a horror movie? Yeah, you're right. Have you ever seen a horror movie when they're just like, there's just so much images and they always put the precursor, you know, like this can cause seizures. Yeah, that's exactly. It's just flashes of images and sounds and thoughts and everything going through your head all within a second, repeatedly, over and over and over and over and over. And it's just no random thought. It's just it's not things that you've done or things that you're thinking about. It's just everything. Everything. Imagine, you know, being 52 years old and everything that you've experienced in your life all going through your head at once.
Woo.
And that's what it kind of feels like. And you just try and get it under control.
Do you have seizures?
No. I mean, I've had.
In the past?
Yeah.
Linked to your TBI?
Yeah. But now, like I said, I think all my seizures that I'm suffering are like in my head.
Well, of course. Hello.
Yeah. And then you try everything. You know, you do the, remember the rub the temples, close the eyes. I mean, it's just, you try to do everything, but it's, when I get the migraines, when the migraine comes on, you're like ultra hypersensitive to sound, light, everything. I mean, everything hurts. But this is kind of, I feel like it's like self-induced. You know? But the littlest of sounds are like, I think sometimes the littlest of sounds are the most irritating, like the fan blades. Yeah. And I can hear them cutting through the air, the sound of it, as they whisk through the air. It's just unnerving.
So how do you get through the day?
Just battle through this, you know, work through this, and then this will go away. Two things: it's either going to go away, or it's going to manifest into a bad headache. It's working. It's slowly like going away.
How long does it hang around?
A couple hours. Well, it depends. If you can get a hold of it and get a control of it, it'll dissipate faster. If not, it'll linger. It'll kind of go back and forth. It'll dip and climb and dip and climb. You know, but it goes through. I mean, it's like a process.
Does it normally start when you wake up, or does it?
Yeah, exactly. It depends on how I wake up. Starts my day. I mean, I wake up with a headache or some sort of headache every day. But most of the time, as soon as I get up and get on my feet, it just like automatically starts clearing up. And I don't know. I think last night I was just thinking about too much stuff as I went to bed.
What were you thinking?
I wasn't tired enough, and that's the problem. And then, see, this is where it feeds itself, this perpetual cycle, is I don't want to sleep until I'm exhausted, literally, where I lay on my pillow and I go right to bed. I can't lay down anymore and fall asleep. I can't come to bed not really tired, because if I lay there, I start thinking. And then if I think about things as I fall asleep, it hurts in the morning. If I come to bed and I'm exhausted when I lay down, and the next thing I know, I'm without even thinking about it, I'm out, then that's a good day. So, you know, that's why sometimes it's like 1 a.m. I mean, last week I couldn't sleep. Every time I put my head down, I was thinking too much about stuff. And I didn't come to bed until like almost 2:45.
Whoa.
And it's not stress. I don't think about things that are in my life. It's just, if something gets in my mind, I start worrying, you know, I start seeing it or thinking about it. You know, just recently I saw where a guy we had served with in First LAR, you know, taken his life. And so I'm thinking about it again, and I was thinking about, you know, that kind of stuff. And it brought back, you know, just thoughts about, you know, guys that I knew. You know, what kind of, what were they, why did they do it? What were they thinking about? What could have been done? You know, so you start thinking of all of that stuff. And sometimes those triggers. Or, you know, you watch a show. Maybe, did you watch Sicario last night?
What? What is that?
You know that, you know, Sicario, you know, it's that new movie now about, it's the movie about Benito Torres going across the border. He's like a Colombian guy who works for the CIA. Josh Brolin's in it. It's a kind of drug, you know, going against cartel. I'm sure you've seen it.
I don't know that I've seen it.
Okay, so.
I was watching the Braves game last night.
Oh, so we were watching that. And, you know, it was kind of like, you know, I just remember, you know, those days of, you know, the lasers on the weapons and the night goggles coming on and the helmet and the gear and the body armor, and you're getting ready to do, you know, a dynamic breach on a door in the middle of the night in someone's house, and the feeling of the humid air from the Freddy's River hitting you in the face. You know, how exciting those days were, and you're like, oh, you know. And I think T even said it. She goes, oh, you miss that, don't you? And I said, yeah, a little bit, but not really. I mean, it's just, you know, and so I started thinking about that. And I was thinking about it all night long, you know, like the times where, like you said, you know, where I was on the, just south of the hospital, by the dam, remember the dam where we had the incident where we shot the guys in the boat.
Right.
But we did a knock on a house down there, and it just turned to a shit show because we had some bad intel that led us down a bad path, and bad things happened. I mean, none of our guys got hurt, but we hurt some people that should have been hurt because we had some bad intel.
Which, you know, truth be told, is sometimes are the most difficult things that you deal with. It's
well, those guys didn't deserve to get hurt.
Exactly.
And that really kind of upset me. Exactly. I was really mad. And you were there. You were at regiment.
Right. No.
And this was right after. Remember, we had a bad. We hit the funeral.
Yes.
That was really bad.
Right.
Bad intel let us down that some bad guy was going to be there. So we did a hit on a freaking funeral. We did a hit on a birthday party at a mansion. And that was really, really bad because there was kids there. I mean, and again, it's just like, what did we, you know, great win for the enemy because we did that hit at the birthday party. It is a dynamic hit, meaning covert is you're in and out. no one knows you're coming, no one knows you left, and dynamic is you want to send a message. We did a breach, you know, on the wall. We did a breach into his house. And this is not a breach of, you know, knocking. It's not the breach of you see on the police department where they do the, you know, battering ram. This is an explosive breach, you know, like boom and brick and mortar and dust and kids are screaming. And I mean, just remember the backyard. And I knew right away, I mean, as soon as that breach went and I looked and I saw people just freaking out. You see all these little Iraqi kids in their best Sunday clothes and all the little balloons and the little party favorites in the backyard, and they're trying to have some semblance of normalcy. And here comes the foreign invader dressed in this, you know, modern armor. Can't see their eyes because we got dark sunglasses, their helmets, and their body armor makes them look huge with guns and all of the other stuff. The traumatic experience. These kids were just frozen in terror. And we rallied them all up in the kitchen, and we were going through, and we knew we made a mistake, so now we're trying to make some kind of, well, we didn't make a mistake. We were acting on what we thought was good intel. And, but we hit that place, and now we rounded all the stuff up, and I remember getting really mad at the Marines, and I kept yelling at them, because I took my helmet off, and I took my body armor off. I took all my gear off. So they could see that you're human, you know, so you, and I remember, I mean, I did, maybe I had a sidearm on, but we had enough guys there and I wasn't really concerned that these 7-year-old kids were going to take my life. And I remember yelling, and looked at the Marines and I said, take your shit off now. And, you know, take your soft sunglasses, take off your helmet, take off your gear. Cause we were all sitting with these, you know, in this room. I said, everybody's take their shit off. Mm-hmm. And everybody looked at me like, I'm crazy. Like,
sure. Mm-hmm. Well, yeah. Yeah.
We're gonna shut up. Take your stuff off. You know, be human. Act human. And now we're trying to.
Yeah. Now we're trying.
Now we're trying to repair it.
Yeah, we're trying to. That's the exact word I was going to use. Now you're trying to repair it, and some people don't get it because you know.
So I had, you know, I remember, you know, looking at the guys and I told, yeah, no people, not a lot of people got it, and I got the stuff from like some of the staff NCOs and some of the junior officers like. It's just bleeding heart shit, you know. Why do we, you know, because these guys were battle-hardened veterans. I mean, maybe this was their first or second deployment. And, you know, now we're facing an enemy. And I remember yelling at some of the Marines, like, hey, what do we got in gun trucks? Go back and get whatever you got in the gun trucks that you think a kid would like. Soccer ball, you know, teddy bears, shit. Bring your package that you just got from home. We'll give them whatever you want, and I'll repay you. And these... You know, and some of the young Marines got it, but a lot of them didn't. And that was the sad part about it.
And for the ones who get it, those are the ones that you can't get out of your head is the look on, like, we're not.
Yeah. You
know, we come in peace, right? And one of General Mattis's, one of his little sayings was, first, do no harm. Right, that's one, and you had all these little things about guardian angels and no better friend, no worse enemy, but you know, relative to civilians, it was first do no harm, and then you see this terrified look. I have a picture of a cordon and search, and there's a little girl, who's in her mother's arms, and she has this kind of. A look on her face of absolute terror. And you look at it and you're like, no, that's not us. We're the good guys. We're not the bad guys. And then as you hear Mike say it, not everybody gets it. And
the bad guys.
It's just so frustrating. And again, we talk about these kind of incidents and you have, I won't mention anybody's name, but you have units that act, do this, and people get killed, and then you find out that it's like, it was bullshit, that they should never gone, and even situations like this, it's like, well, you know, who are the first guys that went down there, and what did they see? Who are the people watching the drone feed? What did they see? They sent us in there knowing that? Do we not have a drone feed? Like, what the fuck's going on, man? This was stupid. Well, you know, and so it's just so frustrating.
You need to have mature
grown-ups
leaders, because as soon as we, and I was an observer, I was a battalion guy, and this is a company level operation, so I went down there to make sure that everything was going to be cool, everything was cool, and we went down there, and the company, because this is their AO, they operate here, they know everybody, they know the dynamics, they know the human dynamics of the environment. So we, when I went down there, what I wanted to see, and I thought out about it later, was as soon as they went through this and they saw, what could be possibly a birthday party, immediately call an audible, and just like, oh, but they couldn't do it. They weren't talented enough to actually do that. It was, hey, this is the play that was called. We got to do this. Well, the defense have lined up for that play, we can't. No, we got to, and that's what makes great quarterbacks, hey, boy, I'm looking at a defense that's set up for, zone coverage. Let's run it. No, let's just throw the ball. That ends up an interception. So it was the same type of situation where we didn't have a lot of talented people, Mac, and we didn't have them in Afghanistan. We had them in the battalion commander's position, because these guys, battalion commanders, were company commanders. They saw it wrong, they came back, and then by the time they got to Afghanistan with our guys, they were battalion commanders. But they couldn't be everywhere at once.
Right.
We couldn't teach this. We tried to at Torian Palms, but we really just couldn't.
You can't. No. And then what you hope is, you hope that there's somebody in the vicinity when this stuff's going on, so that you can, because what you're talking about, and Mike and I have talked about this before, but you're talking about guys who have their heads in the games, who see, like, okay, so we get briefed that we're going to go down here and we're going to do a dynamic breach as part of a coordinate search, because we're going to yoke somebody up. We're looking for somebody. All of a sudden you start seeing all the indicators, children, balloons, okay, like, This is not what it looks like, okay?
Yeah, this is not a meeting of high value.
Yeah, we can coordinate this thing, but that's about as far as this thing's going, and somebody else needs to know what's going on, because everything I'm supposed to be seeing, I'm not seeing. You hope that guy's there. You hope that girl's there that has their head in the game, understands it, and looks at the indicators that you see in front of you and says, this ain't right. Stop. Everybody freeze. And they're not always there, and it's just so, like, what are we doing?
They weren't be able to, and like I said, I remember some of the thoughts, the anger and the frustration of this is, again, this is not my first time where I did stuff like this.
Right.
And, I just remember looking across and seeing this young girl, it was probably about the age of my daughter, and just the fear. And I thought about, if that was my daughter, Megan, and she saw someone like me, and the fear that she would have in her eyes, and, again, now you're, and now, now we got the father, or a couple of the fathers of these people zip-tied on the front floor, it's just, we did it, it was just, like I said, the movie last night brought back some images that, God, I didn't want to remember that again, or I didn't want to remember this. But it was, I remember what I miss kind of is the excitement. Miss the excitement. I missed, and I do. I miss getting in a gun truck and driving down a road. That factor, and you're like, that constant sense of alertness, that constant sense of danger, as you go down the road. You get kind of addicted to that. And a lot of our guys, when they get out, they try and go seek that somewhere else. And leads them down the path of
bad things.
Of trouble.
No, they go back and they work for companies like, most people would know the name Blackwater. And they trying to, because they're not over it yet.
They want to play cool guy. And they, the Danger Dan, they want to do that. And, so I'm reminded, my body reminds me after that. You're like, my mind goes, gosh, I wish I could do that again. That'd be fun. Don everything up, put my body armor on, put my helmet on, get to do the press check, you know, do everything, do the mission brief and then rehearsal and then get ready to go. And then, you know, just that excitement factor and then the, how everything works out. Then I stop and I go, and then the smart me goes, no, no, I don't want to do that ever again, ever. You know,
It's the best team. It's the best team you ever play on.
Yeah, but I don't miss it. I mean, I don't want to do it again.
Right. The I remember watching a QRF from Golf Company 2-4 leave Combat Outpost after we got mortared when I was out there once. And I mean, it's the same guys getting in the same. And this is before we didn't have up armored Humvees at the time.
No.
Right? We didn't shoot any kind of ordnance into the city. This was them, you know, just fighting, brawling in Ramadi in 2004. But and so this was their truck, right? The same guys sit in the same spot every time they roll out as a QRF, right? Mm-hmm. And the machine gunner had his M240, bipod legs down. There was no teacup or anything like that. Bipod legs down on top of the Humvee. It's not even a gun truck. It's a Humvee with the slatted sides on it. Right? The old wooden slats that they had strapped steel to. And so, he's standing up. He's got a cigarette hanging out of his mouth. He's putting on his black gloves that don't have any fingers in it. And he's the first one in the truck. And he's yelling, "Let's go, boys! Time for somebody to pay." And now one Marine's standing there, and he's helping other guys in. He's shoving, you know, like, they step in, there's this little kind of handle that hangs down from the tailgate on one of those Humvees. And so people step in it, right, because you got all your shit on. And then he takes his hand, and he shoves their ass, and he boosts them into the truck. So he's standing there, and he's got a sucker sticking out of his mouth. And I thought it had, like, wow, I've never seen a sucker like that has, like, a coating all the way down the stick. And then I noticed that his tooth is missing, and the sucker's sticking through the hole in his mouth where his tooth was. And so I'm talking to him, some lance corporal, and he said, "Hey, so you want to go with us?" I said, like, "I do, but I can't." And he starts laughing, and he said, "You look like you want to go." And I said, I'm with Joe and Kelly, so I can't go. And then I noticed, like, that coating on the sucker was dirt and slobber and shit. And so he looks at me and he's like, "See you around, sir." And he hops up in the truck and he sits at, like, on, as you look at the truck, he sits on the right hand side, right? He sits down and he locks his leg at the ankle over the guy to his right. Like he'd done it a million times, right? And then the machine gunner turns around, looks, and he yells, "We're up, let's go!" And with that, the vehicle started, and they rolled out. And you're just like, look at that, man. That's what you miss. That intoxicating, let's do this, you're part of this team, right? Everybody knows where you're supposed to sit. We know how to link ankles, blah, 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 blah.
And yeah, you know, like I said, I do and I don't. That's right. Like the bit of the battle, you know, the yin and the yang.
Right.
Had a good class this weekend with the ladies.
Now, is this the new group you're going to teach, or
No. This was the same one. This is the one that I do at the church.
So what are you teaching now? You've been doing this for, like, well over a year.
Yeah, only close to 2 years, it looks like.
Wow. That's awesome. What did you teach? What did you teach?
We talked about, kind of, again, we talked, it's now, because a lot of them have been through a lot of, we do kind of the reinforcement, we talk about things, and, you know, incidents that they've seen, things that we can, you know, read. So we talk about body language.
This week?
Yeah, we talked on Saturday kind of more about body language and things like that, and then responses, you know, because again, it's avoidance. So, you know, you think of, we talk about the pyramid, the triangle of escalation of force, right? The very, if you could image a pyramid, the very tip top, the top up there. And if you put them into segments, in rows or columns,
right.
So the very bottom would be presence, you know, your vocal, your, you know, you saying stop that. That would be, you know, the very basic underlying thing. And then the next one would be, you know, they would be non-confrontational ways, you know, so you'd see like avoidance, you know, looking at things, trying to read things, see danger, people that are acting, outside of a baseline, you know, peculiar behavior, lack of eye contact, you know, just simple things. And then the next one would be, you know, a contact, where you're making contact with this stuff, where you're making a verbal, you know, hey, do you need help? Or, hey, I'm going to call the police to keep this up. And then that escalation goes up, and then it would be, you know, an instrument. If you had something with you, a pen, a flashlight, you know, some kind of everyday thing you could use in your defense. And then it would be, the next thing would be some type of, not a gun yet. The gun would be the very tip top. That would be the top of the triangle. That's the lethal force. But then it would be, you know, some other thing in there. It could be a knife. If it came down to it, you could defend yourself with a knife, a club, whatever. Something that you could kill somebody and do, or do seriously bodily damage. Not necessarily just kill. And then it comes to final with guns. So we got this escalation of force. And where we teach and what I like to teach is the bottom part. Because if you can get good at the bottom part, you never have to get to the top. And what I strongly disagree with a lot of times with women and, you know, is the hands-on, the touch. Don't ever get yourself in a situation where you got to actually touch somebody with your hands. If you have to get to that far where they're attacking you, then that's lethal, you know, apply lethal force. You're a woman. And then it comes down to the way you, you know, describe threat, how you felt. Did you feel like you were in jeopardy of your life? Did you feel like, you know, those type of things? And so if you're a 110-pound woman and a 250-pound man attacking you, it's probably pretty easy to convince somebody that, yeah, you were in fear of your life.
So you're talking about justifying the
use. But if you're
talking about justifying the use.
Justifying lethal force.
Lethal force.
Or any type of deadly force.
Okay.
You know, so if you hurt somebody, you hit somebody with a baseball bat, you don't kill them, that's still seriously bodily damage. You can hurt someone very, very bad. And you're still liable for that unless you can prove that it was self-defense.
Okay.
So what the problem when I – so, you know, we've talked about it is the problem with touching, hands-on, and those type of things is they take a lot of training. Same with the gun. It takes a lot of training. You know, and like I always say, you know how an MMA fighter becomes a very good MMA fighter?
Fights a lot.
How many hours a day do you think they practice?
Practice? I mean, I've heard it referred to as just like any other job. Eight? I mean,
8 hours? Yeah, no, 4 to 8 hours a day? A day.
A day.
7 days a week. And then it's not just the practice, it's the way of life. The eating, the exercise, it's the thought process, it's all of that. And they still get their ass kicked. Right? After all of that, doesn't guarantee that you're going to win every fight. You're still going to get your ass kicked. So I always say, like, we teach these, you know, like teaching women to shoot, teaching women to do self-defense. Unless you do it like a professional does it. Like, we've joked, Mac, what do you think that you say you're good at? You call yourself a professional that you practice 3 hours a year at? Well, nothing. Well, the Marine Corps seems to think that we're professional marksmen, because that's what we do when it comes to shooting. You know? And so what do you call yourself a professional at? You know, and I wouldn't even say, I practice with my gun probably on an average 20 hours a week. And that's cutting it back from what I used to do. But I mean, 20 hours a week, you know, that's, 80 hours a month. And then, you know, over 100 hours or close to 100 hours, a year. Or I mean, 1,000 hours, right?
Right.
I mean, that's not bad. It's better than three. But you got to really look at, and the problem with doing that kind of stuff is you got to, it's hard to get out of that controlled environment. Or you don't ever want to give someone a sense, a false sense of, that they can do something. Because then they'll distract themselves again and they'll go right back to what they normally are, is facing the cell phone. And then when something happens, they can do the, oh, I can bring my gun out and shoot somebody. Oh, I can punch somebody. No. You know, if you can go in there and take a punch from a 220-pound guy, full force, take it right on the jaw, and then get right back up and fight, then you know what? You got a good chance. You know, who wants to sign up for that class?
Yeah, but most guys can't do that.
No, but at least most guys can. Most guys can take. I mean, it comes to a physics thing, you know, like
right.
You know, you talk about body and stuff like that. But most guys, if you get punched, you know, I've been punched. I mean, I got to get my nose fixed for being punched too much, I guess. But I've been punched pretty dang hard, where it almost made me go. Like, this, everything's spinning, and I'm like zoning out, and I know it's going to start going unconscious, and you're fighting that. And that, it doesn't hurt right away. Hurts, always hurts afterwards. You know, I say, every fight I've ever been in, it never hurt at the time. It always hurt afterwards. Because you get excited, you know, you don't feel anything.
Yeah, it doesn't.
All that dopamine drops in your body, and you're like, I'm invincible. And then afterwards, you're like, oh, Jesus, how did I get this big? Then you see this baseball lump on the back of your head, and you're like, where did this come from? Yeah. Your knee hurts. You're like, ooh, what happened?
But at the time, it's a mix of, what was that? And holy smokes, why am I like, well, how did I get knocked to the ground? And then, you know, I guess there's
we found that out, you know. Shoot, I remember in the Marine Corps, I remember when we, first time we would fight was the pugil sticks.
Right.
You know? And I was a little guy when I first went to boot camp, and I went in there, and I jumped in there, and I was like, I got the helmet on, I got the mouth guard, and I came in there, guard, and then boom, this guy hit me with that stick in the helmet, and it made me see stars. And and I remember just dropping to a knee, and I looked up, and there he was, and I came up with an uppercut. And I hit him, and I don't know if it was a cheek shot or not, but I hit him in the bottom of the jaw. But it wrecked him. It wrecked him so good. I mean, I hit him good enough, and it made me feel good because he dropped his stick, you know? So, but then, of course, we got beat up some more. You know, they put you back in there and get fight up again. But all through life, that was, you know, but that wasn't my first time I ever fought, so it didn't matter. You know, and then I'll never, one of my first times ever when I was a Lance Corporal, we were in the Philippines. And one of the boot guys, I mean, I'm a boot Lance Corporal. And one of the senior PFCs who's been in the Marine Corps 2 years, you know, he gives me, we're out in the field or something. And I said something like, hey, let's go and do something. He goes, hey, boot, you can't tell me to do. And I'm like, what?
What?
You're a PFC. Yeah. And he goes, you're a boot. And I said, all right, I'm a boot, but this boot's telling me what to do. Let's go. You know, I was going to do it with them. And he started giving me a hard time. And then he played the, you know, what are you going to do about it? And then now everybody's looking at me.
In that Marine Corps, you got to fight.
Yeah, so it's a smell. So I walked up to him. And as I walked up to him, he made a motion like he was going to do something. So I hit him. And then we went to the ground. We were fighting a little bit. Got broke up. But then all of a sudden everybody's like, hey, this new guy doesn't take any shit from this guy. And so all the guys that had been there for a while now are like, you know, hey, Jones, shut up, you punk. Get up there. That's why you're a PFC.
Right.
Get over there and do what you got to do. You know, so he lost all the credibility because he got his, you know, he got beat up.
Got his punk car pulled.
Well, that's what you had to do back then.
Right.
And so things were solved by, you know, as a corporal. Hey, I need everybody. What are you going to do about it, Corporal? Well, I'm going to take my blouse off and start kicking your ass. Now, I may not win, but you know what? I'm going to hurt you.
But, you know, back in the day, right, if, for instance, if Mike and I are fire team leaders in the same squad, and Mike fights him, and that guy beats him, guess who's taking off his blouse after Mike? It's not
you. The next squad leader.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, the next fire team leader. Look, just so you know, you ain't winning. And, right, and Burns is behind me. So
right. You line up, boys.
Yeah, line up, boys. And that's how they did it. It was
a team effort.
Yeah, you were.
They wouldn't fight you all at once.
No, one at a time.
It would be a gang fight.
Yeah.
But they would fight you in consecutive order. Yep.
Yeah, because you are not going to win, just right. So you know. That's why.
And we used to do that with, you know, as a section leader and stuff, all those section leaders. You'd have one shithead, and he'd be, you know, he's a pretty tough guy. But it's like, okay, and like we tell him, so we're going to fight. And they're like, yeah, you know, you're fighting nine guys. Not at once, but we're all the leaders here, and we're going to stand up for each other. And so let's go. I mean, you may beat up the first three guys, but the last six guys are going to kick your ass.
And it's not going to end at five either when you say, that's enough.
Right?
No. You want to go down this road, you'll go down this road.
Marine Corps, all nine guys get a shot at you.
Marine Corps was a tough place, and that's how the horse stayed in front of the cart, right?
And it's lost that.
Right. You don't want to go there?
They thought it could do it intellectually. Isn't that the funniest thing ever?
You know what? That was some
smart guy in the Marine Corps said, we don't need a Douglas Light bar. We could do this intellectually.
Yes. Sit down and talk to him.
Someone looking for my slide rule and my pocket protector, please.
Yeah. Too funny.
Yeah, how's it working out now?
It ain't.
No. It's all over the place. It's a mess.
You know what?
And people will say, people will say and argue with us and say, well, that's not the way an organization should run. Well, that's the way that organization
should
was.
Run. Well, let me tell you, I will tell you that if you're, for instance, if you're out in western North Dakota working on oil rigs and shit like that, and someone gives you lip? Yeah. You bust his lip. Yeah. There is a similar construct there. Than what we're talking about. And if you have to stop and explain yourself to convince people that they need every time that something's got to be done, it doesn't work like that. And so sometimes, and we don't have the option of firing people. He's in, he's ours. You know, I don't think it's a better system. And it didn't happen that often, but I would tell you this. I went to an all boys Catholic high school, and one of the great things that they did when I acted like a punk, they treated me like a punk. And I learned respect because they would take you and they would, first of all, they'd punch you in class. And most of the time it was just a punch to the back of the head. If you were being a disrespectful smartass, but if you wanted to go, they would take you down to the gym and put the boxing gloves on with you, like a grown man and a 15, 16, 17 year old kid. Yeah, good luck on that deal. And I don't care how good you think you are with your hands. He's a man, and you don't even understand man anger yet. And all of a sudden, you land a lucky punch. Poosh! Down goes Frazier. Right? It's like, all right, we ready to go back to class now? But you know what? Those were important lessons, because if you don't learn those, you continue that behavior, and you become a total worthless piece of shit. But that was something to see, too. Where are you guys going? Sir, just taking care of some business. Nothing to see here. All right.
It was fun.
I'll be back in my office with the door shut.
That's the way things stayed in check.
It was. And, you know, and those guys learned, too, which was the beautiful thing. Otherwise, you would, you know, they would get an OTH, be booted out of the Marine Corps. But if you learned how to speak their language, they got honorable discharges. They made it through. They became good people, and they learned, too. So yeah. It was the beauty of the Marine Corps. It was the beauty of the Marine Corps.
Not now.
That is an interesting discussion. How do you – and the Marine Corps is, you know, this is the whole basis of the two extra weeks at boot camp. Young Americans are coming into the Marine Corps and our value system isn't the same. And Mike and I talked about this, but they come from a culture where they get asked constantly, how does that make you feel, to a culture that doesn't care how they feel. We have missions to accomplish. Get your shit together. Get your shit in one sock. Get going. Be part of this. And there's this cultural, you know, thing, right? And the whole DOD deals with it.
Right.
What? So the values of current day America are not the values of the DOD. How do you, what do you put them through? How do you do it? Is 2 extra weeks in boot camp where you sit around and kind of mentor them a little bit before they leave? Is that enough? Are they even paying attention now? So, I don't know.
It's, and what I'm not advocating either is the Marine Corps start beating people up.
No.
What I'm advocating is, you know, we went from an organization that would punish you for stepping out of line to now we're an organization that tries to get the core understanding of why you stepped out of line. You know, and you're not going to do that. Can't do that. Not in an organization like that. Not where willingness, obedience to orders is the most important thing. You know, that toughness, that rock solid, you know, Marine Corps attitude. And I know a lot of guys we talked, you know, you've talked to a couple of guys. Those guys joined the Marine Corps for that. And as they started to notice that it wasn't there anymore, or it was slowly going away, and then they got tired of it and they walked, they got out of it.
Right. I thought of you when I interviewed Jack Riley last week. He was talking about his first sergeant. And he said, he was a great man, and he was. I can't remember how exactly he said it.
Yeah, but Jack Riley was in the Marine Corps in the 60s.
Right, and he said
his first sergeant fought in Korea and in World War II, probably.
Right, he said, but the one thing you didn't do is you didn't test him or defy him.
No, he'd kick your ass.
He would kick your ass. He would kick your ass.
Those first sergeants, and so when I say this, I get a lot of. I think I get a lot of feedback from a lot of guys that served in Korea or Vietnam, and they're like, I disagree with you on your thoughts about a first sergeant. And they're like, what you're trying to do is compare economics of the 1930s of today. It's different.
Right.
I understand. I'm not saying that yours was bad. What I'm saying is today's is bad. The way we grow them is bad. The way we do things is bad. Yours, back in the day, could even write his own first name, his first name. He could get his sign with an X. And that's good, because that's what we needed. We needed leaders that were smart in combat, that could keep you alive, keep their officer alive, know tactics, know all of that stuff, and still care about you, and kick you in the ass when you need it, and give you a pat on the back when you need it. We don't have that anymore. Now we have people that we're trying to breed as intellectuals, trying to get into the thought process with, you know, psychoanalyze these guys. And like, again, like, come here, Lance Corporal. Is it okay? Is there something wrong at home? Do we need to talk about this? Why don't you come in? Take a day off. You know, you poor thing. You know, and it's like you said, when I was a young NCO, I treated my guys with, it was this, I love you so much, I'm going to work you to death. And they look at me like, what? Yeah. Because I care about you, I'm going to train the shit out of you. So when you do get into a situation, you'll get out of it. And you get to come home and live a good life. That's how I care about you. And so then they'd see the other guy and go, but this guy cares about me by giving me all the time off I want. By not keeping me late. By letting me go home at 15:30 every day. But once a month, that guy comes in on Saturdays and makes me work. What is it with him? He doesn't give a shit about me. Because, again, some guys picked it up. Not everybody. And that's the problem.
It's tough. Watch. Let me tell you, it's tough. When, again, and I hear about these stories from my, I have two sons. And I mean, I would just, one of them was telling me about safety checks, right, for the weekend. It used to be, right, a lecture. right, which the Army is, you know. And the Elixir was this. If you drive, don't drink. If you drink, don't drive. If you're going to kill yourself, try to kill yourself on Monday morning when you're driving back. Be respectful for the rest of our three-day weekend. Don't do it.
And box everything up.
Yeah, yeah. Don't be
military and civilian.
Right. And then everybody laughs. First Sergeant, you got anything? Yeah, if you drive, don't drink. If you drink, don't drive. You know, that's all I got, sir. All right, stand by. Company, O2. Whoo! Liberty call is sounded. First Sergeant, walk away. Boom, they're done. That was it. That was it. Now, everybody's car's got to get checked, okay? And that meant go out, look at everything. Now there's a form, right? Show me your insurance. Now, and if something happens, and the guy gets in a car accident, and the form he showed you was his canceled insurance, and nobody caught that, guess who gets their ass chewed up? It's your fault. At what point does this person become an adult? Like, I'm responsible for his car?
We keep them from,
give me a break.
We protect them from themselves.
It's a stupid, I mean, it's like all, like the road to hell is paved with good intentions. It's the stupidest shit you've ever seen in your life. Like, are you kidding me? Yeah, here's the form. And you look at it now, it's like 10 different questions. You know, where are you going? What's your sleep plan? What's your...
Like, yeah, it's true. You guys are laughing.
Right,
they have a box in there like, what is your sleep plan? What is your plan if you get snowed in?
I'm 19. I'm not going to sleep. I'm going to drive. I mean, when we get there, we're not going to stop. We're going to start partying. I might sleep if I pass out. Otherwise, all through the weekend, we're going to chase women, and we're going to get drunk, and we're going to have a good time. That's the plan.
Right.
Anyway. All right, what else you got on the docket for today?
Today?
Yes.
Not much. Today, like I said, my head's starting to clear up, so I'm sure.
Yeah, you sound better than you did when we started. When we started, I didn't know if you were going to be here for an hour.
Well, because I get it's just you and me talking.
Right.
I can't hear.
Well, do you want to keep talking to me the rest of the day? Or will that help or what?
No, that wouldn't. Me talking to you the rest of the day. Sorry.
Three baseball games, right? So if you put a headset on and listen, who plays? What's the schedule? Who plays? At what time? Do you know?
What today? Today? Astros and Indians at noon. They're playing like in 30 minutes.
Nice. I love
that. Then the Dodgers and the Braves on today, and then tonight is the Red Sox and the Yankees with a game tied 1-1.
Yeah, the series. Good series so far.
Series is tied 1-1.
Right. The Braves made the series.
You know what? I was surprised. The Braves came back and squeaked that one out because the Dodgers looked like they were going to wipe the Braves off.
Yeah, they did. Well, they had, in the ninth inning, they had the bases loaded, and Manny Machado, they had all their studs up. And you're like, oh, the Braves, they tried so hard, but they're going to get Braves
released. And they came back, and you're like, whoa.
Yeah, so good on them. So I hope the Braves, I hope all these series go to 5 games because it's just, high drama. I like it. So anyway. All right.
Except for the Red Sox and the Yankees, that'll
only two more necessary at the stadium. All right, John. Have a good day. I hope you feel better.
Yep, doctor.
There you have it. The one and only. Michael Musselman. That's right. That's him. He didn't sound good when we started. No, you hear his voice and you're like, uh-oh. Something isn't right. So, but he sounds better. That'll do it on a Monday. If you are just tuning in, interesting program. I have some advice in terms of simplification of your life in the first hour, and a discussion about where's Tim Russert when we need him. You know, after a pretty crazy week relative to intellectual discourse in the country. Where do you turn to for enlightened discussion? And the answer is no place. It used to be Tim Russert. Nobody even close to him right now. And there's a piece that was in a publication called Axios. about the radicalization of our discourse. Loud and as hysterical as you can make it. That's how you make it big. So, here's an email entitled, Your Query, How to Have Won in Vietnam. Captain Nielsen is right about how to win militarily, but he is also right about how the politics waffling prohibited winning. Today in Afghanistan and Iraq seems to be the same song, different verse. The effort today is more expensive in treasure, but thank goodness that mostly saves the lives of many Marines, soldiers, sailors, and airmen. Our national civil authorities waste the efforts and sacrifice of our service members and their own aspirations for our country. Elect veterans. Yeah, but, you know, Ken, my problem is Colin Powell. He was a veteran. Rumsfeld, a veteran. Bush, a veteran. Those guys were all veterans. And they made one of the worst foreign policy decisions. And again, not just in terms of American lives, but look what it's done to Iraq, Syria, and then the migration that it's caused that's destabilized Europe. As Europe attempts to deal with a growing Muslim population. And you see more and more conservative governments being elected that are running on a platform of limited immigration. Those guys were all veterans. Yeah. I saw Colin Powell on my TV being critical of Donald Trump. And again, I'm not, Donald Trump has his flaws. I don't want to hear from Colin Powell. That whole catastrophe in Iraq, you can lay at his feet. So, but I'm curious intellectually. So what we would have, the risk we should have assumed was, you know, if China wants a piece of this, then, you know, then I guess we'll have to get it on with the Chinese. If we're going to stop the dominoes from falling, we have to be committed to stopping the dominoes from falling. And we'll tell the Chinese and the Russians we're not going to play this game. That's what we would have had to assume. So when you build that in, that look, we don't want a wider confrontation with the Chinese. We don't want to risk that. When you say okay to that, you accept you're not going to win the war. Because if you accept that and we're not going to broaden the war, then we're not going to go interdict, physically interdict, not just aerial interdict, the Ho Chi Minh Trail. We're not going to pursue into Cambodia and Laos. If that's what you buy, then the war is impossible to win. Is that what it is? Interesting. And you'll hear Bob Nielsen talking about a couple things. One is his thoughts on Vietnam, how to win it. You also hear him talking about post-traumatic winning. Nielsen is a post-traumatic winner. His life is better because of what he's given. He's a good example for us to learn from. And so I'm going to bring post-traumatic winners on. I am. As we preach the gospel of post-traumatic winning. In fact, I'm going to start ordaining ministers of the gospel of post-traumatic winning. I might even send them a certificate. Okay? I might have a little workbook, a little worksheet that you might have to fill out. All right? And some reading you have to do. And then you can become an ordained minister. It doesn't, I mean, if you've lived it, certainly doesn't take a lot. Certainly doesn't have to take a lot. So, with all of that said, have a great afternoon. We'll see you tomorrow here on your home for All Marine Radio, the All Warrior Radio Network, and Gret Newsham's going to join us. Again, in the first hour, if you give me about 10 minutes, I will put in there the link for the story that I tweeted out on Saturday. And it has to do with the things that the Trump administration has done relative to China that has China ready to make a deal. Now we just have to get, diplomatically, we have to get there. But their economy's contracting, their stock market's contracting. They don't want what they said they wanted. So, interesting. On a Monday, baseball in the offing, All Marine Radio, over and out.